Classy, finest choice. Exciting. 6 days of sheer ecstasy. Nothing but work, and there's nothing. If you're part of the work ethic, friends, you realize that the best thing in the world for man is work, right? Oh, yes, sir. Nothing but work. Excuse me while I open this coffee. There's a coffee there. Oh, no, we're playing it very cool here tonight. Well, there's nothing like a three-hour-old coffee that's been marinating in a cardboard cup. That's the taste of urbanization. That's the taste of our time. Excuse me, Jackie Gleason. Oh, we have a little note. Speaking of urbanization, it says we have a little note here. Get ready with the musico, please, if you will. Martin, hold on a minute there. Dear Gene, do you believe this? Bell Telephone, where I work, held a safety meeting a few weeks back, which was extremely informative on how girls, women, and females in general should defend themselves in case they're attacked, which is a joke in itself, since a lot of the elderly ladies at Bell Tel secretly wish they would be attacked. Well, after the meeting, they passed out these keychains. I could not believe my eyes. Well, I have one here, and I'm going to give it to you. You're going to love it. It's a keychain that was given to the ladies there. And you know what it says? Now, I'm going to need a little echo chamber there. You know what it says? Scream! And run! That's all the keychain says, scream and run. Well, after they passed out these keychains, he says, I almost flipped. Scream and run. Can you imagine what would happen if someone saw my keychain? You know, my key's hanging and says scream and run attached to it. What do you think? You remember what they used to do? Yeah, when life was simple and nice and soft and warm, you know, when keychains would say, souvenir of Starved Rock, Illinois. You know, or you know, nice stuff like it says scream and run, if you please. Don't forget, girls, here we go. Oh, I will scream. Oh, I will run. Yes, I will scream and run and cut out like a big fat bandit. I will go. Razzmatazz. Thank you. Reset that, Martin. We'd like to salute the... Boy, that's a wonderful piece of trivia. The New Jersey Bell Women's Safety Committee, who have a keychain that says Scream and Run. It's too bad that they don't have... You know, if they'd used real imagination on that, Marty, just think what they could have done. They could have had a little switchblade, put into it. Or, you know, one of those little gas launchers, you know. Scream and run. Now, what do you do if a nice man from the, from the front office makes a grab at you? Do you scream and run, or do you show him your keychain? Hey, huh? Hey, would you like that? You come right in here now. I'll give this to you. You can have this. It says Scream and Run on it. Gee, that's a nice slogan for a lot of people today. I think that's kind of nice. Scream and Run. There you go, my dear. You'll love that. Speaking of dangerous lives that are lived by ladies, though, these days, we'd like to salute a lady, Mrs. Mike West of Hovland, Minnesota. Now, you people think, you know, you got a pretty nippy time here and there. Mrs. Hovland went outdoors, and this is, by the way, a piece from the Passaic Herald News. Oh, it's a hard-hitting, dynamic paper. And Mrs. Hovland went outdoors to tie up one of her female dogs, which apparently got loose. And she's tying it up, see? And she noticed that the animal, as she's tying it up, she's putting the thing around its neck, it edged away warily from her and sort of, you know, looked kind of funny, a little suspicious, and then ran into the woods. And then Mrs. West saw the real dog come out of the doghouse. She then realized that she had tried to tie up a very large timber wolf. What great... Did you see this timber wolf going back in under the woods? Did you see that, babe? Did you see what she was trying to do? Excuse me if I laugh. But, I kind of like that. By the way, speaking of laughter, if you don't mind if I get on something here real bad. Tonight, it's something that we've never done before. Now, a lot of you guys in the New York area here, you know, walking around scratching, walking up and down 48th Street, you know, in other parts of the Fun City complex here. By the way, complex has many meanings. So, there's the medical meaning, and probably it's closer to the truth this time. However, for you in New York, you probably are not aware of the fact that that this little thing we do here on, you know, 10:15 to 11 is heard in other parts of the country. And, yes, it's heard, for example, on WGBH in Boston, which is in Boston, which is, you shouldn't be held against it, but it's nevertheless, no, it's, you know, you can't help it. It's in Boston. And it's also heard on KRAB in Seattle, which is a great name for a radio station. And it is. It's a very bugged radio station. And the name, of course, is well selected. And they like, you know, like Kitsch or something. But nevertheless, KRAB carries the show, and KBOO in Portland, Oregon. It's another dynamic. Yeah, now all these stations, in case you're curious, are non-profit radio stations. You know, they are. They're like, BII here in New York, and the listener-sponsored and all that stuff. And of course, the one thing that you have going with all listener-sponsored stations is a tremendous sense of self-satisfaction. And a great sense of righteousness. It's just righteous, very much. And so that's kind of nice. And tonight, there's other places that carry it. For example, we're on the. You didn't make a note of what it is. Actually, you wrote all the places, but what it is some college network. What's it called? Honey, you do those things real nice. It's called something. You don't know. Well, you do. It's something New England College Network or something like that. That helps a lot. My producer's right on it, you know. But nevertheless, it's on the Amherst Station, Mount Holyoke, Dartmouth, Lowell Institute of Technology, and other places of that type. Now, you're helpful, honey. Not often successful, but helpful. And it's like me, you know, always helping my old man when I was a kid. You know, I remember one of the great moments when I'm helping him. See, I'm standing outside the car. He's trying to fix the tire in a driving rain on U.S. 41, see, and I'm 9. And he's taking the lug bolts off, you know, off the tire. And he's wrestling in the fantastic driving rain, trying to put on his spare. Well, now, that's a very touchy operation, especially if you're using a used jack, which you save from a car, you know, you had 9 years before. It doesn't quite fit the car, and the wind is blowing it. It's swaying back and forth. My mother sitting in the front seat yelling. And every once in a while, a giant semi-tractor goes by, you know, kicks dirt all over him. And so he's trying to put the tire on, and he's trying to line up the lug bolts, you know. You're sort of half prone trying to get your wheel on with those six screws that stick out. He's working away there. It's not easy. And I'm holding the bolts. I've got the nuts, see, in a big hubcap, and I'm standing next to him for Daddy, see. Well, he calls up. He says, "Quick, he's got the wheel on now." See, he says, "Quick, give me one of the nuts." And I leap forward, and all I remember was the hubcap spinning in the air briefly amid the rain. The hubcap turns over, and all the lug bolts fly under the car in the weeds, in the dark. And that meant we were going to be 3 hours right there while the old man crawled around on the ground looking for the bolts. Well, of course, I was helpful. I was helpful the way my producer is helpful quite often. So, you know, I want to salute you in there. But nevertheless, tonight, we'd like to salute these little nonprofit radio stations everywhere, struggling away. And would you please? Here we go. Yes, sir, all together now. Culture keeps marching on. You cannot keep it down for long. Basu, W-U-G-B-H-O, K-R-A-A-B, K-B-O-O, we salute thee. Amherst, Mount Holyoke, Dartmouth and Lowell, it's the technology too. Hooray, hooray, hooray for culture, yeah. Culture marches on. That's enough. That's enough. Best salute you guys out there. You know how they describe me in the program guide of KRIB. They describe me many ways. For one description, they describe me. It says Jay Shepherd, Neo Mencken Palaver from Gotham. Gee whiz, you know that's getting big. Well, of course, you know, I don't know. I mean, when you find yourself being described in very exotic terms, you begin to get a little nervous. Like, for example, I'll tell you one of the ways that I believe the generation gap comes through. A kid wrote me a letter. In fact, he wrote it for his entire ninth grade English class. No, history, excuse me, his entire ninth grade history class. And he says, "Shepherd, you won't believe this." He says, "Every one of us in the history class, all us guys listen, see?" And he says, one day, one of us said, asked the teacher, our history teacher, you know, about Shepherd. And he says, the guy says, "Shepherd?" He said, "What do you mean, Shepherd? You mean you listen to Shepherd?" And the kid says, "Yeah, yeah." All the kids say, "Yeah, yeah, wow, groovy." He says, "Why do you listen to him?" "Why, he is nothing more nor less than Fulton Lewis Jr." And all these kids pass. I said, "Shepherd compared to Fulton Lewis Jr.?" He says, "Holy smokes, I wish they'd get..." If that guy thinks that of you, you know, and what you do, I'm going to not trust him at all about the Battle of Bull Run. He says, and I thought, you know, it's fantastic to be compared with something like that. You know, that's roughly like comparing Soupy Sales with Walter Cronkite. You know, they both talk, so obviously, you know, they're the same. They're both on TV, so, you know, they must be doing the same thing. Would you please hit the money button there? Let's hit him right in the eye. Play, please. Here comes the dough.
And now a special message from Dr. Pepper. The first Dr. Pepper truck has reached New York. We now switch you to our man on the street, Saul Weinberg, for a first-hand report.
Yes, it's true. The first Dr. Pepper truck has indeed arrived. The mood here is one of great excitement. Excuse me, please. People are cheering and screaming, old and young alike. What's the cable, please? Have united in one great gesture of welcome. I'm trying to get near the truck. Welcome. Welcome to New York.
How do you like it, kid?
Gee, Eddie, it's everything you said it would be.
Would you like to say something to our audience? How does it feel to be the first truck to make it through?
speaking for the kid and myself, we're kind of proud.
Hey, Mom, look, I made it!
Well, there you have it. Some people said they'd never make it. But it's May 18th, and Dr. Pepper is in New York.
Oh, that's exciting, I'll tell you. Dr. Pepper finally made it. That did it then. Well, I knew he'd make the big time. He's only been making that pop for 400 years. He finally made New York. That's good. Yeah, that's... Well, now, yeah, a lot of you out there, now, this is not part of the commercial, so don't please log it. Who's on the log out there? Some dill doc is out there writing down Shepherd's. No, it's nothing to do with the commercial. But I'm always interested in the fact that there are different things which are part of a whole area of the country which don't have any relationship to other parts of the country, and they're sort of like, you know, part of the way of life. For example, it would surprise a lot of people, absolutely floor a lot of people. Yeah, thank you. There comes Russ in. They would be astounded. Big Russ, if I'd known it was you, I wouldn't have said it. No, but, you know, Russ, I'm going to tell you, that Dr. Pepper spot is interesting to me because, you know, philosophically, we must look at things philosophically these days. You know, it's a very serious time. And a part of the splintering of our country is the fact that many people in various parts of the country have their own totems, which have nothing to do with the other parts of the country. For example, I'll guarantee you, in Indianapolis, they never heard of Dr. Brown's celery tonic. That's the truth. I came to New York, and I, you know, here was Dr. Brown's celery tonic. And first of all, I almost, you know, the idea of celery tonic was enough to make me think of my Aunt Em. You know, she was always, you know, drinking stuff like, you know, Dr. Livermore's little turnip powders, stuff like that. And so, but nevertheless, you know, everybody knows about Dr. Brown's celery tonic here and there. It's absolutely part of the culture. Well, you go to Goshen, Indiana, and they would be astounded that you never heard of Dr. Pepper. I mean, Dr. Pepper is as much part of the world out there as, Nathan's hot dogs are part of the scene here in New York. Now you go up into Maine. No, or every place has a little thing going for it. You go up into Maine, and you walk into, let's say, Whizzer's. There's a place in Oakland, Maine called Whizzer's. Now, you walk into Whizzer's in Oakland, Maine. An old Whiz is sitting back there. He's selling cans of night crawlers and stuff like that, you know, and he's making grinders. Now, you know what is it, a grinder? You mean you don't know what a grinder is? Oh. No wonder this country is blowing apart. There's no communication whatsoever. You don't know what a grinder is. You see, I'm the universal man. Why? Because I'm living a gypsy life. No, I'm serious. I'm living a life that most, speaking of grinders, this is WOR, and we're in New York, of course. And and when you live a gypsy life, you know, it's like a carny type, or you know, an itinerant small town newspaper guy who, you know, he one day he's working on the Passaic Herald, and next he's working on the Boomtown Idaho Gazette, and you know, he just makes the rounds. Well, ultimately, he knows the innermost underbelly of the country the way most people never know. Well, I've worked, let's see, this is my 12th radio station, my 4th television station. I played on 5 minor league ball teams. So you get to know something about the underbelly of the country. And, for example, it amazes me to walk into a place here in New York and say, hey, you know what I'd like to have right now? I'd like to have a great big fat juicy grinder. And they look at you like you said something obscene. See, because apparently the word grinder means something different on Fordham Road. I don't quite know what it means on Fordham Road. But a grinder, very roughly, to put it roughly, a grinder is the upper New England equivalent to the hero. The hero sandwich, see, the hero. Now they don't call them heroes up there. Here, up there, they're grinders, so there's a totally different language. Now you go into middle New England. Now, let's say you get halfway up to Maine, and you don't ask for a grinder. What do you ask for up there? I'll give you a test. That is correct. That's right. You ask for a submarine, and you get a sub sandwich, a big submarine. See, now there are little sub. Let's put it this way: if you're going to diagram the sentence related to the hero family, the genus Heroes, or the the genus Grinderoticus. You'd have to say that there are little subfamilies, like the Blimpy is hanging down off one little thing, and that's really a trade name, see? But everywhere you go, there's a different name for those things. And now you get up into Whizzer's, for example, up in Oakland, Maine, where their specialty is grinders. You go in there. They also have the the Syrian dagwood, which is a real bomber. Incidentally, have you ever heard of that same sandwich called a bomber? Yeah. In fact, there's one place I know of in Ohio where they make a thing called Italian salami bombers. And it's the same thing. See, it's all an Italian-type sandwich. Well, the bomber out there, this place, you know, they take it literally. So you go in there, you get an Italian salami bomber, or you get an Italian provolone bomber. And it comes as great big, you know, it's a great big Italian loaf. It's cut, and all the oil and stuff is dripping out of it. And they have bomber wings on it, little cardboard wings on the side of it, see. So if you want to, you can just sail it out across the street, see. And it, by the way, has fairly good aerodynamics, in case you're curious. That is, if you stick with the salami, you get the provolone in, she gets a little nose heavy. However, I'm fascinated by a country, probably more than most guys. Most guys are fascinated by one political aspect. But now let's take this Dr. Pepper thing. The idea of introducing Dr. Pepper to a city would surprise people, say, in a place like Vincennes, Indiana, where Dr. Pepper has been part of their lives for as long as they can remember, like before they were born, you know, 40, 50 years. Now here's another one. I'll ask you another one. How many of you know what the big drink is in Maine? You walk into Wizards, and you have yourself a grinder, right? You say, "Hey, Wiz." And he says, "Yeah, yep." Yeah. That's the way he'd say it, yep. Yeah. You'd say, "Well, look, Wiz, I want give me a grinder all the way, it works." All right. And, of course, wait a little bit. Because Maine says, yeah, he said, "You know, I just come back from Bar Harbor, a little tired," and he starts working on your grinder. Well, then, you know, he's got the grinder going, he's got all the stuff. Then what do you ask for up there? What? Absolutely correct, Russ. You've been there. That's what you ask for. And you say, "And Wiz?" And you say, "Yeah." Say, "You got any cold Moxie?" "Yeah, it's in the freezer." And you reach over and you grab yourself a bottle of Moxie. And you open it up, and you're all set. You have your Moxie and your grinder. Now, the New Yorker, he would go up there, see, and he would know, he would be totally out of his water up there. And of course, the Maine guy comes down here, and he goes in. Where does he go? He goes into, Needick's. Now, what could be more in New York than, let's say, to go into Julius's at the 46th and Broadway, or let's say 34th Street. He goes into the Needick's on 34th, and he walks in, and there's a whole bunch of people all standing in, and they're drinking the stuff, and they're knocking out a piccolo and all that. And he walks up, and he says, "Excuse me," and the guy says, "What do you want?" And he says, of course, I'm using the language of the native, "What do you want, Mac?" And he says, "Moxie, please." The guy says, "What are you, Moxie? I got plenty of Moxie. You trying to put me down, Mac?" Foreigner out of town, dildox. And again, right away, there's a clash between cultures. The Moxie, now, I'm going to ask you another one. How many of you ever heard of Green River? Green River. Now, I was up I think I told this story. I was up at Clark University here recently. And I took a couple of guys. We were waiting in the airline terminal there, We were waiting in the terminal there. And in the Worcester, Mass. Incidentally, Worcester, Mass. Is the pothole capital of the world. They're very proud of that. You know, every town is proud of its major product. And for a long while, I remember when Secaucus was proud of that pig smell. Until the word pig got to have bad connotations, and I don't talk much about it. Now it's the packing industry. But nevertheless, every town is curiously proud, if I can quote Dr. If I quote Mr. Commander Whitehead of the Schweppes people, they're curiously proud of their product. And so Worcester is proud of its potholes. In fact, I wasn't in Worcester, Mass. 20 minutes when the guy I was with, who was driving a little Volkswagen, he busted the front axle. See, boom, we hit this pothole, crash, see. And down goes the front, and you could hear a tinkle of glass and a little dribbling of fluids, unnamed fluids from the front. We drove on, see. And this car now is listening, and I said, "Gee, Maury, that was a pothole and a half." And there's a long pause. "Yeah," he says, we've got best potholes in all New England up here in Worcester. And he's proud of it, you see, because, you get perversely proud of that. And so up in Worcester, Mass., I took these guys in, and I said, there was a Coke machine there, and in the middle of it all, it said Green River. And the guy says, "Green River?" And I says, "Green River, I have holy smokes, I'm home." and all this stuff, you know, has been spread out. And he tried Green River, and he said, gee, you know, I never tasted it, but it's a whole new thing. Well, now, this is part of the splinter, really the splinter aspect of our town and our whole area. Now, let's take the whole idea of the pizza. Now pizzas have very different meanings in different parts of the country. For example, you know that in certain parts of the Midwest, they'll call them Italian cartwheels. Have you ever heard them call that? You've never heard it called that here, right? Well, out there, they'll say, let's go out and get a cartwheel. And if you ever hear that out there, he's referring to a pizza, what you would call a pizza here. And he'll say, you want a sausage cartwheel, or do you want a cheese cartwheel? And you go out and get it. Now, I wonder if anybody's ever really written a piece on the whole. Now, the further west you go, I don't know whether this interests you at all or not, but it does me. The further west you go, the more the Oriental atmosphere pervades. See, I think this country, as it does, if you take a look at a world map, really, and you just take a look at a globe, and you discover some interesting things about America. Not so much a flat map, but a globe, and you realize that we here in the East, right here in New York City, we're like, we're a third of a world almost away from the people who live in, say, Utah and Idaho and California. It's a tremendous distance, and that distance, of course, makes the people out there relate to other parts of the world differently than we do. For example, if you're living in, say, let's take an example, San Diego. Well, now, London, to a guy living in San Diego, is 6,000 plus miles away. It's a fantastic distance. Here in New York, London, is kind of a local trip. I'll say, very rough analogy, but most people say they'll fly to London, some agent will fly to London. But for a guy living in San Diego, flying to London is roughly like somebody here in New York saying, well, I'm flying to Moscow, or I'm flying to, no, even further than that, I'm flying to Beirut. It's about 6,000 miles, a tremendous distance. And so these people out there, they relate to the Orient. And so you'll find all up and down the East Coast, you'll find thousands of Hawaiian hamburger joints. Yeah. The Hawaiian food is part of their culture, just like here, the Italian food is part of our culture. You'll go into drive-ins here, and they'll have pizza hamburgers, they'll have mozzarella hamburgers. In other words, we relate to Europe. Almost all of our attitudes here relate to European. French restaurants, big deal here in New York. French restaurants. It's the local culture. Italian, German restaurants. Well, you know that when I was a kid out in Chicago, their idea of to go out to a foreign restaurant, much, much more than New York here. Two of them. You rarely see them here. Mexican restaurants, again, because Mexico is a much more local situation there. Directly south, practically, Chicago is Mexico, and furthermore, large numbers of Mexicans have come up and live in the whole area up there, just like we have large numbers of Spanish people, Puerto Ricans and so on up here. They have large numbers of Mexicans. So when we would go out, we would, like, a kid of New York will go to a pizza joint, or he'll go to, an Italian spaghetti joint or something like that. We would go, as a kid, we'd go to a Mexican place. And so we become, out in the Midwest, the average guy living out there, he is very, very conversant with Mexican food. He can tell you more about Mexican food than, the average person here in New York who thinks he knows Mexican food. And here in New York, they can tell you about Italian food. When I came out, I was amazed that, all the different Italian dishes. I would sit in an Italian restaurant, and I couldn't tell you fettuccine from linguine, you know. But give me tacos and all the way down through con carne and all the rest of it. I could tell you what they all meant. The average New Yorker couldn't tell you what chili con carne even means. He couldn't. He doesn't know fritos and all this stuff, which is part of the culture of people who go to a Mexican restaurant. Now, it's very hard to find a good Mexican restaurant in New York. There aren't many of them here. Just and conversely, in Chicago, it's almost impossible to find a good French restaurant. And I'm talking about good Mexican restaurant. I'm not talking about a joint just sells chili in a chili parlor, some place where you can get, you know, you get Texas Red or something like that. I'm talking about real Mexican food, superb Mexican food. Now, and the other restaurant that everybody went to out there continually, there's two restaurants, really, types of restaurants that everybody out there was very aware of. When you'd go out on a Sunday, for example, you'd go to, well, one of them was Chinese. Again, it's the East. There was this tremendous, from about, I would say, from about Chicago West, the Chinese restaurant. How many times have you seen a Western movie when the restaurant in town was a Chinese restaurant? In an old Western movie. Yeah, I'm sure it's true. I'm telling you, it's very true, because the Chinese, and you know why this is so? Are you curious? Well, there's a historical reason. The Chinese built the Union Pacific, and the Chinese... When they built, the Chinese laborer built the Union Pacific Railroad as it went west. And there were thousands of Chinese who settled throughout the Middle West, primarily because it reminded them very much of the Great Plains, tremendous steppes, plains area of northern China. And so they're everywhere you go, up in places like Minnesota, Minneapolis, and places, there's always a great Chinese restaurant. Italian? Not much. Now, you know what? Another one of the restaurants you'll find, as you go further west, you'll find more and more of them. And I'm talking about classical German restaurants. Classical German restaurants. And so you get out into places like, Chicago, for example. There's a classical, if you ever go to Chicago, don't miss it. It's probably the greatest German restaurant in the history of the world, or at least one of the great ones. It's a place called the Red Star. And it's a classical German restaurant, a great big old Charles Adams house right outside the Loop, and it's a great restaurant. And it's German. Another thing that you find in places like Chicago, thousands of Swedish restaurants. Very rare here. You don't find many Swedish bakeries. Well, no, that's something else. Yes, of course, kosher restaurants are a big thing here, but you'll find them pretty much around. I mean, you'll always find a kosher restaurant district. Yes, you will. In Cincinnati, Chicago, and so forth. But I'm talking about specific nationalities. A specific, you know, that's a big difference, Marty. A specific nationality. And so the splintering of the country into various areas. Now take seafood. The idea of seafood to the average Midwesterner is very exotic. The idea of getting a fresh lobster is, well, it's obviously why. There's a reason. He's far away from it. But then I'll tell you something else here. That is just as rare here. It is almost impossible in a city like New York to get good fresh water fish, which is a very different thing. So how long has it been since you've had a good steak of, say, northern pike? A good steak of a fillet, for example, which you can get in many restaurants. You go into a Midwestern restaurant, about this time of the year, by the way, and you get what they call jack salmon, which is a walleye. Walleye, these are river fish. And they're superb. Now, that's unusual because most people would never know what I'm talking about. But out here, they'll have a big thing. Michigan, for example, and the smelts. But now we're going round and round. You want to get the commercials out of the way, so let's get the commercials. Everybody's getting worried in there, so hit the button.
How soon is the baby in mother's womb a human being? What does he do while waiting to be born? Would you believe somersaulting? How soon a cure for cancer? How drugs work? Can you fall in love at 40? 80, Story of Life, Part 1. Now on sale at your local magazine counter, gives you the facts. Week after week, Story of Life examines and explores your whole body. Glands, brain, emotions, the shape of your personality, erotic thoughts and passions. Story of Life, Part 1. Week after week explores and reveals the fascinating facts of life today. Story of Life in magazine format is published each week and is packed with full-color photographs and illustrations. Over a period of time, your weekly magazines build into 7 volumes of medical fact and opinion. Story of Life is exciting reading and information for all the family. Be sure to get your first copy of Story of Life, Part 1.